Hello, this is Barry Phillips, your host for Reconnect. Thank you so much for your time and your attention for the next 24 and a half minutes that we spend together. Just a few years ago, I'm sitting here trying to contemplate exactly how many, maybe 3-4 years ago, about this time of year, I was asked in prayer. Maybe that kind of sounds strange, but I was praying, and then the Father asked me a question, or actually gave me a verbal command, if you will, saying to me, ask me for the corner harvest. I have learned over the years that when the Father addresses me in this manner, whether I understand where he's going with this or not, to simply follow along and do as he requests, and then the important information will be revealed. So I did as I was asked. I asked him, and I said, Father, give to me the corner harvest, having no idea what that term meant or who it might refer to. I began to seek him then for a period of time, saying to him or asking of him, reveal to me who the corner harvest is and how I am to reach them. Actually, this program, Reconnect, is an effort to follow through with that request. And my earliest understanding was that the corner harvest refers to those who feel isolated, disconnected, somehow pushed to the corners and not a part of the larger harvest in the middle of the field. The Torah teaches us that a landowner was to round off the corners of his harvest, allowing the poor and those who had no lands to reap from or to harvest from to have an opportunity with some dignity to come in and begin to reap and have something for themselves. The more generous the landowner, the larger rounding of the corners he had. The more stingy, the closer to the corner that he cut. So no one's more generous than the Father. I understood then that there was a large portion of people somehow relegated to the corners of the harvest, maybe overlooked in the central part of things. So I began to refine my understanding of what this corner harvest is about, realizing that it's not just those that are disconnected, isolated, maybe walking by themselves and alone. You can be in the middle of a congregation, a large congregation, and not feel connected, not feel apart, still feel a stranger. It's a place you can go. It's a people you can fellowship with. But in your heart and in your mind, you're still alone. You can be a part of a family and feel disconnected. You can, a lot of situations cause people to feel isolated or shut up within themselves, frustrated, maybe feeling that I'm getting nowhere. And there is a certain sense of abandonment that begins to rise up. I've gotten a taste of that in the last couple, 3 months. I have an isolated place that I can go and pray, recently discovered. And sitting there in this isolation place, contemplating what's going on in my life over the last several months. I've mentioned before that I received the devastating news that my dad passed, and it was sudden, totally unexpected, under unexpected circumstances, and it has rocked my world. My chief prayer proponent, covering guard, he's gone. My dad is no longer here to intercede and to pray for me. And I have felt and realized the devastating loss of intercession and prayer. A few days ago, sometime last week, sitting in this place of a prayer chamber, if you will, just staring outside and pondering, meditating, thinking, not really praying, just kind of meandering in my thoughts, somewhat out loud in a feeble effort to pray, I felt despondent. I felt the depression falling in. I felt the anxiousness of uncertainty. A lot of negative, pressing pressure sweeping over me, plaguing my mind, frustration at a level that I've not known. This is a few days then after a near tornado came right at my front door here at my home. This past Friday at 4 o'clock or about 4:06 in the afternoon, my grandchildren are on a bus about two driveways down the road, two or three homes away from us. Let enough a child there. It had been a rainy day. We'd had some thunder. Nothing out of the ordinary. Little brief spurts of wind, but nothing serious. When all of a sudden, a particular weather cell developed on the radar screen of the weather stations or apps on your phone. It was a dark red cell that just suddenly developed. And there's an open, clear-cut field directly across the road from my home. And that wind began to blow over that clear-cut territory. My neighbor lost 15 very large oak trees that suddenly were just toppled onto his property. The wind suddenly gusted up, and we'd had some winds building, some, you know, 70 miles an hour. I mean, that was serious, but nothing overwhelming. The weather report says that a gust of 102 mile an hour wind came across that field right into my front door. And between me and my front door and that field is a small stand of trees, oaks and some pines and so forth. And my wife began to cry out. Something was happening. I was expecting the thundering of that locomotive sound that is typified as indicating a tornado. I was looking for the twister and trying to get my wife to get into a secure room in the house as best as we could find. The lights went out. A huge tree fell across the road, knocked the power lines down. And trees began to topple and fall in my yard. And I watched a large pine tree fall over onto my wife's car, ended up being totaled. And I just had devastation in my front yard. The first thing that came to my mind was, if my dad was still alive and praying and interceding for me, would this storm have lifted up and went right over top of us and never been experienced? I was shattered. Despondent and just feeling at the bottom. So I sat out in the aftermath of all of that after a few days in this place of prayer, and it dawned on me, there is a dark place, a depressing, pressured, anxious, hurting place that a lot of people are walking in or experiencing. And I had no idea that this place even existed. How did I get here? And how, more importantly, how do I get out? And I realized that others that experienced this, I would tell them, let's pray. And we're going to pray, and the Father's going to fix this, and you're going to be okay. And I would just check on them. I'm realizing that it's not that simple. It's not that easy. For those of you that have been at this place or at this place, or maybe you call this such place normal, usual. This is what you expect when you get out of bed in the morning. I'm learning and understanding that those who have gone through grief, those who are going through a time that they feel abandoned or anxious or depressed, they need more than a slap on the back and an occasional hug or phone call. They need help. And I'm realizing that Reconnect needs to do more than what it's done in the past. So, where did this take us? I want to shift gears here, but not really. If you'll hold with me, I want to try to tie two thoughts together. You and I, most of my audience that is listening, we are a part of a phenomenon that has been taking place over the last decade or two, where we are a part of a Torah renewal or revival, a Torah restoration. Wherever it was that we were, the Father began to speak to us and help us to understand that there is more. He baited us. He enticed us. He fed us a nugget and it germinated in us the question, is this all that there is? And out of seeking the answer to that question, we began to study and to pray and to cry out to him, and he began to reveal to us the legitimacy of the Torah for our day and helped us to understand that the doctrine that says that the law has been done away with, that the law is only bondage and servitude, and that we were never meant to walk in that, that the Old Testament, quote unquote, has been done away with, that that's not a correct doctrine. So we began to explore the Torah and find the beauty in it and find the legitimacy of it being changed. And so we call ourselves keepers of the Torah. Maybe we know better than that, and we call ourselves Torah observant. And maybe some of us understand, maybe I'm not as observant as I should be, so I am Torah pursuant. However you want to identify yourself, we are attaching ourselves again to some means of observing, keeping, pursuing the Torah. Genesis to Deuteronomy, Bereshit to Devarim, we're trying. We're looking to get there. But if we'll be honest about the reality of this Hebrew roots community that we have identified ourselves at, or some variation of that, if we will be very honest about our observance level or our pursuing level, it has come down to the big three, as I call them. We keep Shabbat, at least we say that we do, or we try to. We honor the feast days, the Hamoedim, and we watch what we eat to the best of our exiled nation status ability. We do not knowingly ingest anything that is blood, that is pork or shellfish. We don't eat rabbit and squirrels anymore. We try to eat what is a clean scriptural diet to the best of our ability. And again, in the land of exile, you never know what might be hidden in the ingredients list or not even listed, or hidden in the manufacturing process. And things like breads that they may have something in them that you would never, it's bread. It's flour, water, and yeast. How can it be wrong? You never know what's stuck in there. So we're keeping the big three. And for some of us, we feel like, you know, that's the majority of the Torah, and that's the level of observance that we have come to. And then we would refine that. So, well, you know, we wear the tassels, the tzitzit on our belt loops, or on a katan, a tili katan around ourselves under our garments and so forth. We do the best that we can. For some of us, we've said, well, you know, I've learned to speak Hebrew, or I know Hebrew words, or I can study Hebrew to some degree. I've learned the alphabet and I can say key Hebrew phrases. Maybe some of you have learned some Hebrew prayers. You can bless your food, or you can bless the giver of the food, as we would refine that, or you can pray over the lighting of candles if you do such things. You've learned some things, well and good. And for most of us, we have learned some appreciation and adoption of Jewish culture. And we understand, you know, more about why our brother Yehuda does what he does, or why he doesn't do what he doesn't do. And we built some Jewish relationships, and we call ourselves getting there. Okay, any and all of those things are good. But if we want to be honest about the observance, the pursuing, the keeping of the Torah, the big three are just scratching the surface. When we investigate the Torah, there is so much more that is there. So we see family issues about how to relate with one another, how that there are boundaries around relationships. You have that seedy chapter that is over in Vayikra or Leviticus, chapter 17, I think, where it says, you know, you're not to have relations with certain members of your family. I'm turning the page to verify where. Actually, that's chapter 18. I just want to be certain there. So, you know, you're not to uncover one another. Why? Well, it's family. Well, obviously, you know, in our minds, we would never expose the physical bodies of a near kinsman, but we do that relationally. We spill one another's secrets. We make accusations of one another, and especially of those that are closest to us. The Torah instructs us about our finances and about our business dealings, that we are to be beyond reproach and that we are to not put one another in servitude pertaining to money and to work. How to take on an employee and understand that, you know, you don't give them meaningless work. You help them to grow and get to the place where they know how to operate on their own. We give help to those who can't help themselves. We offer compassion. The Torah teaches us about who the Messiah is. The Torah reveals the Messiah and then calls you and I to follow this Messiah. The Torah teaches us about the covenant, this beautiful, wonderful covenant that our Creator, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, has given to Abraham, the patriarch, our father, and has been passed down now to us, and has been brought to power through the shed blood and the life in that blood of Messiah Yeshua. That covenant causes us to have a love for the covenant people, a love for people. I'll come back to that in a moment, but also a love for the land of the covenant. If we're going to walk in the Torah, it should foster in us a great love for Eretz Israel, the covenant land, the promised land that was given to Abraham. That we're to love this land and yearn for it and desire to live within it. And to have a connection, a serving heart toward, a willing obedience to the King of the covenant. The keeper, the administrator of this covenant. We are to be loyal and observant of his heart and his purpose. And while we think that we've gotten to the place where we're doing all of that, and we pin a medal on our chest and hang a medallion around our neck, put a big smile on our face, proud of our accomplishments, I want you to know that there's a place called the Court of Heaven where one stands to accuse and to slander. Our adversary, Hasatan, stands at the throne in heaven, and you would think that he would denigrate the Torah, that he would malign the Torah. Oh, no, no. In the Court of Heaven, and this is a legal place of jurisprudence. This is a scriptural, spiritual arena. Hasatan, our adversary, is a Torah expert. That may be shocking to somebody, but he is an expert at the letter of the Torah. And he stands before the throne of the Most High, the judge of all of the earth, and points his finger at you and I and demands that we be held to the strictest application of the letter of the Torah that we claim to observe. They don't keep Shabbat correctly. They have not yet engaged properly in the feast. Their tzitzit are not tied correctly. They malign the speaking of the Hebrew, the speaking of the Hebrew. They're eating food that is not 100% clean. They fail to keep the covenant. They fail in their finances. They fail in their family. He is pointing out all of our flaws, all of our inconsistencies. And for all of our Torah speak, we're falling short of it. And he is pointing out and accusing and slandering. So what does this have to do with those who are broken and depressed? My friend, all of us have our stuff. All of us have our issues. When you and I point our finger and accuse and slander, saying they're not doing it correct, they're not keeping it correct, they're not saying it right, they're not walking according to the right calendar, they're not observing to my level of expectation, we have become collaborating witnesses for the prosecution. We stand at Hasatan's side, and with him we point the finger, and we agree with him. Our brother, our sister, they're not doing it right. And they are to be held accountable to the strictest application. But Yeshua warned us with the same measure of judgment that we judge, that we're going to be judged. We think we may be on the winning side, but then standing in the defense chair side, we're next. Someone's always going to one-up us and be better at what we're claiming to do and point the finger. I'm telling you that there are people that are already beaten down. They're already hurting. They're already in a dark place. And for you and I to look at them and offer them token compassion that's easy and convenient on our behalf, and then turn and accuse and to slander as well, we're not helping anything. Thankfully, the Father's hearing my prayers and the prayers of those who are praying for us. And I have confidence that this dark, pressure, hard, anxious place is a temporary dwelling. And I will soon come out of this. I'm dependent on the Father to help me to do that. But having stepped to this room, to this darker place, I'm realizing that we all need help. May the Father help us all in this room to have hope, to see light, to be able to break free of the chains that want to ensnare and enslave us, and to overcome. May the accuser's words fall to the floor, and those who would agree with Messiah, who stands in our defense and claims the blood that has been shed, and reminds the throne of heaven that he came to destroy all the works of the devil, and that he has brought victory over death itself. You and I can climb out of this place. We can be free. And we don't have to join the prosecutor. We can stand on the side of the Messiah and be free. May the Father help us. May he help us to love one another as he has loved us, to pray and to intercede for one another and show genuine compassion. This is Barry with Reconnect. I'll talk to you again next week. Shalom.